Spirit Blade Underground, episode 367. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 367.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, my reactions and personal highlights from E3 2015. This is really a big E3 for me this year. It's some of the most exciting stuff I've seen an E3 in a while for my personal taste, but definitely some disappointments. So I'm going to talk about all of that in this super duper hype sized episode. All right, let's get to it. Nice, another achievement unlocked. I bet I got more achievements than anybody I know.
Yes, sitting in front of a video game for 5 hours a day is quite an achievement.
See, this is why I don't like talking to you.
Then why don't you spend more time with real people?
Because real people don't respond to console commands.
Wow, Peter. You unlocked yet another achievement. You must have more achievements than anyone you know. Behold, you are great, and greatly to be praised.
Yeah, better. E3 is upon us. I want to give you just my initial reactions to the first game featured in Bethesda's E3 conference for this year, Doom. Now, I'm not a big like shooter fan because I suck at shooters, but this is part of a historic series, and so I really, you know, was curious as to what they were going to reveal, what the game would look like, and it looks really cool. I mean, if you're like me and you like just darkly themed sci-fi or fantasy or horror or stuff like that, you know, then this game I think is going to catch your eye immediately. It has a dark sense of humor as well. I mean, there's a moment like where they're trying to get access to like this door, and in order to get access to it, they have to, you know, it's got a handprint encoding thing, and so they like take the severed arm off of the dead guy that had access to it, and they put it up to the scanner and stuff. And I'll, you know, you guys can watch the video and check it out yourselves. It's got crazy, intense, gory combat, a dark sci-fi atmosphere. Hopefully, for me, it's got an easy mode and a cool campaign. Because I'm not into multiplayer, but I mean, this looks like a cool, intense, you know, scary world to kind of check out and do combat in and stuff like that. Even if the campaign isn't that great, I love this feature that they have that is going to allow people on multiple platforms to create these mods that will be available to everybody regardless of platform. So you'll be able to play this game on, say, PC or whatever, and then they've got a built-in modding tool where you can make scenarios and levels that then you can put on their, Bethesda's BethesdaNet server, I think. And then other people can play that same thing. And so it looks like there's just tons of potential for people to create campaigns, essentially. You know, so even if the campaign ends up being kind of short or whatever, there's so much potential for replay value here. So with that in mind, I really hope there is an easy mode for people like me who suck at shooters, who aren't interested in being competitive, but just want to inhabit and explore worlds created in video games like this one. One question I had as a believer is, in the multiplayer demo section, they showed a player gaining a power-up from like a floating spinning pentagram, and I missed this detail, but in the post-interview with the creator, they referred to that as like turning into a demon. I missed if that's what was happening or not, but anyway, I just made me, take note because, to my knowledge, and I have very limited knowledge of the series, but I do have the Doom board game, which was produced years ago, has long been out of print. But the way they present these demons in the Doom board game is that they are like interdimensional creatures. They're from another dimension. And while I think that's not a bad way to see the spiritual world as being on these other dimensions, it was other dimensional in like the non-scientific sense, where you open up a portal, you enter into this other dimension, and it's just another place that is still in three-dimensional space and time. It's not literally in the what we think of as another scientific dimension of like width, depth, time, that kind of stuff. So I was able to look at that game and say, okay, well, the people are calling these creatures from another world demons, but they're not necessarily biblical demons or something, but now they're anchoring this idea of like this of this pentagram to the demonology of this world, and the pentagram is like that's a real world symbol that's associated with real world Satanism, and so that's the first time I've seen like a very close link to the demons in this game, quote unquote demons in this game, to like real world Satan worship, Now maybe there's been other instances of these kinds of symbology references in the past in the game series. I'm not familiar enough with it to know, but it did make me think, okay, how should we as believers feel about interacting with this kind of content? How can we engage in this kind of thing where like we're getting power-ups from these symbols of Satanism, or even turning into a demon or something like that? How can we do that and not be sinning? The other thing that I thought about is in this world, what we saw is a lot of like guys with tons of testosterone. You just got that feel anyway. It wasn't necessarily a male protagonist carrying the gun around, but you got that feel. And like with these big old guns and stuff, and they're tearing into demons with chainsaws and stuff like that. And it made me think about the idea of empowerment. And should we feel empowered when it comes to being in a place like hell? And my thinking there is like, I don't know if we should like get into that kind of mindset of like feeling like, yeah, I'm tough enough for hell. Hell, separation from God, by our own choice. I mean, this whole scenario being presented in Doom is just ridiculous. I mean, that's not what hell is. Hell is separation, eternal separation from God, But I mean, should we feel like that's an environment that we are tough enough for, or that we can even dominate and thrive in? And I'm not sure that's kind of a mentality that we want to validate. Now, I'm not saying that playing a game like this is going to, of necessity, validate that mentality, but it's just maybe something to be aware of. Is this game going to introduce that thought to my mind and make me kind of be thinking defiantly about the idea of hell? Like, well, I don't mind going to hell. I'm tough enough for hell, Or maybe, we already have that mentality, and this is a game that's going to just kind of validate that way of thinking. I mean, you're probably not in that mentality if you're watching this, but I mean, I know a lot of people that aren't Christians, will tune into these videos sometimes too. But anyway, I would tend to think that's not a very wise mentality to take, that I'm tough enough for hell. But this is just a video game, and this is just fantasy. So I think we can engage with this kind of content. But I'll get to that in a second about how I think we can do that. Let's see. Oh, yeah. The other thing I was noticing as I was looking at when they would go to hell, the hell levels, I was like, okay, so once again, we've got another game that is validating what I think are inaccurate depictions and representations of what hell truly is. And I won't go into all the details now, but we have this vision of hell that involves fire and just like people on torture racks and chains and skulls and all this kind of stuff that is really taken from a long history of visual representations created by believers in the past that maybe were intended to be symbolic, maybe were intended to be literal, but either way, those depictions don't represent the biblical concept of Hell. And I'll post a link in this video so you guys can see. I made a video a while back that talked about that and looks at what the Bible actually has to say and what it doesn't have to say about hell, so that we can differentiate between what we see typically in movies like Hellraiser and Event Horizon and Diablo and in games like the Doom series, you know, so we can differentiate between these popular, excuse me, I'm spitting all over the place, so we can differentiate between these popular depictions of hell and what the Bible actually says about hell as you look at the text and understand the way in which it was written, the genre, and the metaphors being used there. So anyway, I'll try to put a link in this video to that. So how can we engage in this kind of content without sinning? I think we absolutely can. The first thing, as I mentioned before, is to recognize that it's fantasy. Recognize that it's fantasy and that, you know, we don't have to believe in this this world that's being created. We can suspend disbelief for the game experience and then resume our disbelief when we put the controller down. Number two way that I think we can engage in this content without sinning is that, you know, and if they the above, if the, that first choice, recognize the fantasy, is not enough, is to try to insert our own narrative. You know, I mean, sometimes, I don't do this very often unless I feel like I really want to or need to enjoy a game experience, but, you know, we can fill in the gaps between the lines. You know, maybe the person that you're playing in this game is actually a believer, and so the reason they are able to thrive in hell, which, again, I still think that's you have to just suspend disbelief about a whole bunch of stuff, but if you can do that, but not have trouble with this part, maybe this is a believer, and that's the reason because they have the Holy Spirit protecting them and empowering them and allowing them to survive in this environment and against these demons. And you know, what do you do with them? The getting powers from pentagrams. Well, maybe this is some kind of a double agent. You know, maybe in some way that this believer is being empowered to go in and convince the powers of darkness that, yeah, it's buying into their lies that they can give it power and make it stronger and all that kind of stuff. And it's just kind of playing along when in truth, it's gaining its power all the time from God, the source of all power in the end. So that would be one way that I think you could approach this. And then the third way that I think we can engage in this content without sinning is just to remember and reflect on truth. You know, I mean, as you're going and playing through the game, notice how they're portraying hell, and then go back and look at the Bible or think about the Bible as you're playing. Yeah, okay, well, this lines up. Oh, this doesn't, you know, or whatever. And just kind of, not in a way that's, you know, I'm not saying that this process, if it sounds like that will just suck the fun out of it, for me, it really doesn't. I play games all the time that contradict my worldviews and biblical teaching, and I still really enjoy them. But I'm just kind of like taking note as I go through of like, you know, oh, okay, well, that is, you know, from this school of thought, and that's broken philosophy, that's just illogical, it just doesn't make any sense, it's just not truth, you know. And this does line up, this doesn't line up with scripture, and so forth, you know. But I still have a blast playing all these kind of games. And I think just having an awareness of that and just kind of like differentiating between, you know, the different ideas being presented and that which is actually truth is a way that we can absolutely engage in this kind of content. So all that to say, I think the game looks really cool. I will probably suck at it terribly because I suck at shooters, but I do want to give it a try. Okay, time to talk about Fallout 4. Oh my gosh, I was stunned and speechless multiple times because they just did some really cool things I wasn't expecting and brought back a whole bunch of great stuff that I was. I cannot wait for this game. It looks awesome. You start out in the pre-war world, which is just such a great idea for the series to give us a taste of the world before the bombs dropped, and then fast forward into the post-bomb world, you know, 200 years in the future. They haven't told us how that's going to be possible playing the same character in both places, which they have confirmed is the case. Probably some kind of cryogenic freezing technology or something. But the fact that you get to be a character who grew up in the pre-war world and then is experiencing the world of Fallout, the wasteland, for the first time, that is such a cool idea, and I think is going to make for some very great character moments, which they seem to be pushing for, but in not all the right ways, in my opinion. I'll get to that in a little bit. The face animation seems to be better, definitely, but still kind of wooden. That's just not a strength of theirs, I don't think, but who freaking cares? The rest of the graphics are nicely improved. The world looks great. It looks varied. VATS, the VATS system system in combat has returned, but instead of like freezing everything and allowing you to take all the time in the world to select any body part that you want, it doesn't quite freeze. It goes into a slow-mo where you select body parts and then speed up time again. Or no, you do execute your action still in the slow motion mode. So I'm not sure how I feel about that. Because I just suck at shooters, and I'm not good at thinking and reacting fast, you know, which is why I tend to gravitate toward RPGs. But I'm guessing the game is going to be forgiving enough and RPG enough that I'll still be able to get by just fine. And I think it will look a little bit more cool and feel a little bit more dynamic and moving forward, you know, rather than a complete freeze. But what we saw of the Brotherhood of Steel armor, it looks really cool. The way you move in it feels, it looks like it's going to feel very different. The camera's going to behave a little bit more different to reflect the clunkiness of that armor. And then there's this ability to like do these super jumps or rocket propelled jumps or maybe flying. I'm not sure. They definitely have some moments when you're in a chopper like shooting on what's below you, but I don't know if that's going to be like, it's probably going to be very programmed, kind of like the dragon as you're flying around in Skyrim in the I can't remember what the name of the DLC is, where you get to ride around in dragons, but you're not really controlling the dragon. And in the footage, it looks like you're more manning the gun than you are guiding the helicopter. So it's probably not going to, you know, introduce like a Saints Row, Grand Theft Auto type open world flying like you might see in those games. But anyway, it still looks really, really cool. I'm a little disappointed. Speaking of kind of like the character and the story and stuff like that, there are only two voice actors for the main roles. Todd Howard confirmed this in the post-show interview. There's one male voice, one female voice. And granted, they did a ton of voice work, so there's going to be voice acting from the main protagonist throughout the game. I don't like this. I don't like this. This is probably the one thing about the game that I'm like, no, no, no. And the reason for that is I like to be able to create whatever kind of character I want and kind of think of myself as whatever kind of character and personality that I want. And when you've just got one voice actor, especially, you know, like one male voice actor if you want to play male, or one female voice actor if you want to play female, then you end up with this BioWare, middle-of-the-road, blah-blah, boring type of personality, like we got in the Mass Effect games. I thought that the male Shepard was so boring. Female Shepard, a little more interesting, just because she was, you know, a little bit butch and just kind of like a slightly different from the average female voice that you would hear day to day. And that's the only thing that's really made her interesting to me. And the Shepard voice I found insanely boring. Same thing with the Inquisitor voice that I chose in Dragon Age Inquisition. They're just so non-committal, and I think that's probably because they want this voice to fit with all different kinds of characters, but then what ends up happening in my case is it fits with none of the types of characters that I want to play, which tend to be very extreme, like in Dragon Age Inquisition. I wanted a crusty old wizard who wanted to conquer the world. And I didn't have a voice like that, you know? I wanted more choices, more options, and at least if there's no voice acting, I can imagine that voice in my head. What I wish they would have done to innovate in a new way in this game is to incorporate voice command technology so that you as a player could read one of those four lines of dialogue out loud, and then the character you're talking to would respond. The game would detect which choice you made, and the character would respond, and the NPC you're talking to would respond. Would that not be so freaking cool and better? I think. I hope that they... Well, I was going to say I hope that they give you the option to turn off the voice of the protagonist, but that's not going to be useful in this game because... Well, I guess maybe if you turn subtitles on, but then you're just probably going to have to sit through subtitles. I don't know how that's going to work. But anyway, the dialogue options in this game, it's very much like a Mass Effect type setup, and I hate that. I hate it. Because... Not only are you stuck with this voice that, you know, may not represent what you want to be as a character, you can't tell what it is that you're going to say. You get these very basic options, like, you know, respond and say like a basic question like, what's going on around here, or something like that. And then your character doesn't say what's going on around here. He says something more expansive and more specific. And sometimes in those BioWare games, I will end up selecting a dialogue option because I get one impression about what I'm going to say from the little snippet they give me. But then my character says something that's totally different from what I would want to say playing this character the way I want to play them. And so far from bringing, you know, character depth, this takes away from me my ability to play the kind of character that I want to play. And I think that's really ironic because Todd Howard said both in this in the Bethesda conference and the Microsoft conference, you can create any kind of character you want. Not true if you're limited to these voices. All right, what else? Oh, I do like that Todd Howard said that you can, that's the guy that's in charge overseeing the entire game, Todd Howard, that you can walk away or open fire mid-dialogue. And I think that's nice, because at least then my actions can kind of define, you know, what kind of personality my character has, even if I feel like the voice and the dialogue options can't. So I do appreciate that. We've got a dog in this game, which I think is a bit of a novelty. It's not really clear to me what usefulness he serves. You can have him go get things, but I don't know. Can I just walk over and pick that thing up? Or do I get to send him into harm's way into a minefield or something? Like, I think that dog's going to die because I'm not a very good shot. And I think I'm going to shoot that dog accidentally pretty quickly. So, okay, we'll see how that goes. All right, the Pip-Boy has these, like, collectible cartridges that you can find around the wasteland that have video games on them. So there's one that, like, is like a Donkey Kong knockoff and one that's like a Missile Command knockoff. I don't know how many of these things there are, but I saw that and I was just like, oh my gosh, one more way that I can lose myself dinking around in this world. Oh my gosh, this is going to be insane. Let's see here, what else? Oh, there's going to be a real Pip-Boy that it comes with the collector's edition. They're calling it the Pip-Boy edition, which when I checked last night on Amazon was currently not available. I don't think it's because they sold out because they didn't even have a price next to it. So we'll see. The game, the base game, you can pre-order, but not the collector's, the Pip-Boy edition right now, to my knowledge, as I'm recording this. Anyway, this it's like, you know, it's a big hunk of plastic and whatever, but you can put a smartphone in there and they're creating a free app that interacts. It's a second screen experience. So apparently you can, if you want, play the game with this app, and instead of pulling up your Pip-Boy in the game, you can just do it right on your wrist if you have the collector's edition thingy. But I don't know. When I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to pay whatever they ask for this. But I spent some time thinking about it and kind of coming down from it. I was like, you know, I don't need that, you know, especially if it's not, like, really ridiculous. I did a search on the Handsome Jack collection that has the remote control claptrap that goes around. That's, like, $500. It's more than a console. It's, like, $500, $600. It's insane. Now, this isn't as technologically ambitious. It's got a few little lights on it and a battery, but other than that, I mean, it's just, a chunk of plastic that you attach to your arm. So it probably won't cost near that much, but, I mean, I'm still, like, I don't know how much I'm willing to pay for this. At the end of the day, I did a search on Amazon. I can get a wrist strap that will stick my iPhone to my left hand for $6, you know, on Amazon. So I'll probably just do that, you know, because I am nerd enough that I would love to have that thing on my wrist while I'm sitting in my room playing Fallout 4. But I don't know if I'm nerd enough to tack on an extra 50 to 70 or who knows how much bucks to the price of the game. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But it's definitely something of note to check out. Let's see here. The crafting is super expanded in this game. Every object in the game is useful for deconstructing and then getting components from to do crafting of weapons, of scopes, of all kinds of little gadgets. You can make weapons, houses. You can build entire settlements. You can build and really need to build defenses for those settlements to protect them against raiders that will come. You can establish trade caravan routes between the different places that you build settlements on. There are multiple places to build such settlements on. I mean, this is like Minecraft meets Fallout. I'm going to, like, lose myself in this game. If I didn't, like, you know, limit myself to, like, a few hours each night of playing this, I would lose my life in this game. It'll take me I don't know how many hours to complete. Holy crap. Anyway, November 10th is when this game is coming out. Cannot wait for it. That date is just, it's going to come just a few days after my Extra Life marathon, which I even thought about delaying for this, but no, because, you know, nobody's going to want to tune into that stream and watch me play Fallout for 24 hours, which I probably would, and probably totally burn out my PS4 in the process. Oh my gosh. Some cool things in addition to that that they announced, BethesdaNet is a new service that's going to allow mod trading cross-platform. Now, they mentioned that specifically for Doom, but it makes me wonder, will this possibly work in the future for Fallout 4 mods as well? Now, at the Microsoft conference, which I just watched this morning and I'll probably comment on in a different video, announced that mods made on the PC will be playable on the Fallout 4 version on Xbox One, but I don't know if that's exclusive to. I have to watch that footage again to see if it's exclusive or not. Even if it is, I wouldn't be surprised if this eventually came to a console like PS4, which is what I'm on. Anyway, we'll see. But I think it is a good sign of things to come in the future that they are planning on, you know, making mods compatible cross-platform, PC to PS4 to Xbox One. That's the plan for Doom at this point, and that would be awesome if they would find a way to do more and more of that, because as a console gamer, I've been missing out on mods. Now, it does, you know, it's not that big of a deal, but it is something in the back of my mind. I'm just like, ah, nuts, I'm missing out on something there. But anyway, I'm going to get so much play out of just the basic game as it's made by Bethesda. Anyway, they did announce a Fallout Shelter phone game that's available for free right now. No paywall timers. He said that he thinks you'll be pleasantly surprised. I was like saying, "Oh yeah, I'll download it. I'll download that. I'll totally check it out." But you know, I slept on it, and I'm like, no, I probably won't even bother downloading it. I want to save space on my phone for random videos I might want to, you know, record. So I'm not going to do that. But I am disappointed that there was no announcement of Bethesda collections of, like, Oblivion and Skyrim for PS4 or Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas for PS4. I think that would be great, but I can understand that maybe the timing wouldn't be right. It might steal sales away from Fallout 4. I don't know what the business thinking is there, but selfishly, I want those games upscaled for my PS4. Anyway, all right, so moving on, just a couple thoughts that I thought were significant philosophically, spiritually, you know, as we're just kind of engaging as believers in entertainment. Todd Howard said, "Entertainment is an essential part of our lives." And I thought, is that true, or is that kind of overhyped talk? And as I thought about it, my mind went to Ecclesiastes 5, 18 and 19, which I didn't have memorized, but I had to look up. I knew kind of where it was. And that says, "Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him, for this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil. This is the gift of God." So if we've been given the capacity to enjoy our possessions and our wealth, then we should do that. That's a gift from God. And then Ecclesiastes 3:1 says, "For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven." And there's a bunch of different seasons of life described there. In verse 4 it says, "A time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance." And dancing certainly is a form of celebration, a form of entertainment. And interestingly enough, the Hebrew word used there for laugh also means to sport or to play. So I think that entertainment could absolutely be argued. I don't know if it's an airtight argument, but I think it could absolutely be argued that it's an essential part of our lives. But it's one part, and it's not to be prioritized over loving and serving God and those around us as we find those opportunities, as we become aware of those opportunities on a case-by-case basis, whether that's interacting with our family and doing the things that we ought to be doing as family members or as friends or as members of our church community. We don't want to hole ourselves away and just be focused on self-entertainment. But absolutely, I think it can be argued to be an essential part of life. All right, another thing that I was thinking about while I was just like getting excited about Fallout, I wondered to myself, why am I so excited about this game? I mean, okay, well, let's think about the things that you love about the game. You love crafting, you love looting, you love leveling. I love exploring, and I love surprise and wonder, and I love the sense of challenge, but that comes without frustration. Why do I love all of those things? Because I don't like exploring in real nature. I kind of hate nature, but I love to do it in the worlds of Skyrim and Fallout, but I wouldn't want to live there because it's freaking dangerous. So why do I love this game? And I think it's because of the difference between work as it is now and work as it was intended to be and will be in God's eternal kingdom. Right now, work is tiresome and productivity is thwarted. I feel like that every day. I've had to stop this video several times because my boys have had some issues getting along and things that I've had to attend to. And all of that is that sense of frustration that comes from our work, that comes with our work, the various obstacles that we face, the ways that our productivity is thwarted, that's all the result of sin. And our choice to just kind of engage in it and give ourselves over to it in the world. We see that in Genesis 3:18, that work is just kind of messed up and it's just going to be difficult and hard, and it's going to have the joy sucked out of it by default because of sin. But in eternity, as believers, we won't experience any of the defeat or the pain that work brings to our lives now. And we see that in Revelation 21, verse 4. God has placed in us a desire for that kind of life, for work to feel like play, you know, for productivity and creation to feel like play and fun and exploration, you know. He's put that desire in our hearts, I think, so that we'll seek out the solution that only He can provide. And I think that's part of what is meant when Ecclesiastes 3:11 says, He has put eternity into man's heart. Continuing my blabbering about E3 2015, this time I'm talking about the Microsoft press conference. Now, I'm not an Xbox fan. I experienced some great games, which are still on the shelf behind me, during the Xbox 360 generation, but that hardware was very unkind to me. I didn't even deal with the Red Ring issue, but still had system after system fail completely. So, man, it's really... undependable hardware, in my opinion. And so, and they obviously did not win me over for this generation, but I'm still rooting for them to be competitive, because selfishly that will make Sony more competitive and give me better quality and the stuff that I want as a PS4 player right now. So anyway, I was very interested in what they were going to be doing at their conference this year, and it was a great show. I just think with each passing year since the mistakes they made with the launch of the Xbox One, this system has been has had more and more selling points, and that has never been more true than this year. If they would have done what they did this year last year, then I would have definitely hesitated before getting a PS4. I don't know what would have happened. I definitely would have hesitated. I probably still wouldn't have trusted them enough to give me a console that will last more than 2 years. But anyway, okay, let me talk about the highlights for me. The first thing that I notice is there's a little bit of language in these kinds of press conferences that can be interesting, and the example here was them talking about anything being possible. I can't even remember what game they were talking about at the time, but like, in such and such a setting, anything is possible. There are no limits to what blah, 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 blah. You know, and we hear those phrases, anything is possible and no limits, blah, 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 all over the place in these kinds of press conferences. They were just the first ones that I noticed using that language this year. I find that interesting because really nobody can deliver on that. Nobody can deliver on that in a gameplay experience or any kind of entertainment. There are always limits, and not everything is possible. But so why do we say that? And I think that's because we yearn for the eternal. And I mentioned that verse from Ecclesiastes last time about how God sets eternity in the hearts of man. Let me see if I can find that. Here we go. Ecclesiastes 3:11 says that He has put eternity into man's heart. We have a desire for this limitless potential, and it's never going to be satisfied here, but we all want it. So I think that we kind of see a little hint of our built-in desire for eternity at events like this. But anyway, that's not what these events are mainly about, just something that they inadvertently kind of showcase about human nature. So moving on. Showstopper for me. Showstopper for the Microsoft conference was backwards compatibility for Xbox 360 games. Oh my gosh. As I'm recording this now, we are 40 minutes away from the live stream of Sony's conference, and I really hope that they will match this. I really wanted them to do this last year. They didn't give it to me, even though 6 months, as much as 6 months, I think it was a little less, prior to last year's E3, there were very solidly confirmed reports that Sony was working on it. Evidently, they stopped working on it, or it wasn't ready for last year's E3, or it's not as high of a priority. I don't know, but at the very least, if they don't announce it this year, I am so glad that Xbox One is getting backwards compatibility on the 360, not because it's going to make me go over to Xbox One yet, But it will hopefully make Sony feel like, oh, okay, we got to match that, because that's what I want. I have got a great catalog of PS2 games, and eventually my PS2 is going to give out. And besides that, I would love to be able to play them just slightly upscaled, because through an HDMI cable onto my TV, that would just be wonderful. I would love to enjoy my old library of PS2 games, which I still am very frequently playing. I'd love to be able to have them playable on my PS4, and I think this is a great step toward making that possible on PS4, oddly enough. And beyond that, I think what this means for me is eventually I may get an Xbox One. Not because I want to play games for Xbox One, but eventually this 360 that I just bought, which is the most recent version, recent model, hopefully has all the kinks worked out of it. I bought it like 3 or 4 months ago or whatever. Eventually this thing is going to die out, but they may still be making Xbox Ones when it does, which means at that time I could get an Xbox One, hopefully for cheap, that will continue to play all my 360 games. That was really cool news for me. The new controller, the new Elite wireless controller for the Xbox One, looks really cool. It has some added buttons. You can swap around the faces of each of these buttons. I mean, it's really, I was like, I couldn't even wrap my head around the potential of this thing, but clearly it seemed to have a ton. So I'll be very curious to see and hear what people think of that controller. It looks fascinating. Fallout 3 comes for free with Fallout 4 when you buy it on Xbox One. That was interesting to me. Throughout the conference, they were making choices and creating kind of they were giving more and more value to the backwards compatibility. This was just one example of that, where Fallout 3 was going to be available when you purchase Fallout 4 on Xbox One. Fascinating. Let's see, PC mods. Todd Howard announced that PC mods for Fallout 4 will be usable for free on Xbox One. Boom. That was awesome. Now, I wonder if that's going to come through the BethesdaNet service, in which case it may also be possible that those mods will be available for free on PS4, but they're just saying it now at Xbox One because they got to deal with them or something. I mean, we'll see what the future holds as it all pans out. Sometimes things can seem to be exclusive features when they're announced at E3, and really you just find out that, you know, they didn't say they were exclusive. Actually, you know what? Let me check that really quick. Okay, I just double-checked, and it's interesting because right before he makes the announcement about the mods being transferable from PC to Xbox One games, they put up a little banner at the bottom that says, exclusive offer, Fallout 3 comes with Xbox 4 or whatever, and then that goes away, but it's up there. And I remember when I was watching the conference that all I saw was exclusive something. I managed to catch it, and then later on I never saw exclusive again, but I was wondering, what did I see there? It said exclusive. And I don't know if they were intentionally being deceptive or that was just happenstance that it worked out, but it almost gives the impression that, you know, they put the word exclusive up there and then this thing about Fallout 3 coming with Fallout 4. But then right at that moment, as he's saying that, is when they, as he's prepping to talk about mods, is when they put that little notice up there. You know, he says, there's one feature I've wanted, and that's when they put up the Fallout 3 comes for free on Xbox 4, or Fallout 4, yeah, when you buy Xbox, whatever, you know what I'm trying to say. Anyway, so no, there is no indication that this feature is exclusive to the Xbox One version of Fallout 4. We'll just see if they remain silent for a while regarding this feature's existence on PlayStation 4. Sometimes they'll do that. They'll just be silent. They won't, you know, so that you can infer what you will. Anyway, but that was like, wow, to have Fallout 4 at the Xbox One conference was a big potential sign of them associating with Xbox One. So we'll see if PS4 kind of gets the bad deal when it comes to features for Fallout 4. The tagline for The Division, this caught my ear. They said, there cannot be any hope for tomorrow if we don't fight for today. And I think there's some truth to that. I think what they're getting at is we need to take action if we want to see a better tomorrow or something like that. If we want things to become better, if we want things to improve, then it is our responsibility to take action. But I disagree with the statement, there cannot be any hope for tomorrow if we don't fight for today. Because at the end of the day, we can fight for today, and that won't do anything. And there can still be hope for tomorrow. And there can be hope for tomorrow if we don't fight for today. Because ultimately, our hope, as believers in Jesus know, our hope does not come from what we can accomplish, what we can do. Now, we have a responsibility as believers to do what is right, to do what is good, to contribute to a better world. But our hope is in Jesus. Our hope is that ultimately, although he is doing work through us now, he will finish the work and he will perfect the work, and he will bring about the change that we really long for in the world at the end of the day. Not us. Let's see here. What else? Division was touted as an action RPG. That might be the first time I saw it called that, but in the demo, in what I saw at the Xbox conference and what I saw later at Ubisoft, I didn't see any indication that they're of the RPG kind of elements. And so this game, combined that with all the obviously multiplayer intentions of the game, it's off my radar now. I love RPGs, I love action RPGs, but this one just seems to be exclusively multiplayer. There just doesn't seem to be any single player component, and I believe it's coming out March 2016. If we're not seeing any kind of indication of a single player, you know, campaign, I don't think we're going to at this point. So, off my radar. Okay. Rainbow Six Vegas comes free. Rainbow Six Vegas 1 and 2 are free with Rainbow Six Siege. So again, they're pushing more and more this backwards compatibility feature of the Xbox One to play 360 games. Once again, thank you, Microsoft. That's great. Sony, listen up and get it done. Okay. let's see here. Of course, I guess it's not quite equivalent. I guess the equivalent would be backwards compatibility to Xbox One. I don't really need to play PS3 games. I played most of those on 360, but anyway, blah, 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 blah. Sword Coast Legends is coming to Xbox One, which they mentioned. I think it's coming to PS4 as well, but I'll be interested to see how that plays, because it just looks like a PC RPG that I don't know how they're going to handle that with gamepad controls, but if they can do it and do it well, I'd much prefer to play a game like that way. So I'm excited to see more. Hopefully we'll see more demos and stuff like that on the show floor and videos that we get from various outlets. The HoloLens and Minecraft, that demonstration looked awesome. They had a table out, and they basically made the world of Minecraft appear, or at least a slice of it, that the person using the HoloLens could kind of grab and move around so that they could see different parts of the world as they moved what was showcased on this table in real space. You kind of have to see the video to see kind of how this worked, but I'm really fascinated with this technology, and I'm excited for it in the second generation, because I remember, you know, even though, yes, it's a live demo, it was still very scripted. I am still absolutely confident that when this tech comes out, the first generation is going to be crap. People aren't going to like it. It's going to have weirdness, and it's going to be just Kinect all over again, you know, where they promise one thing, but the actual execution just falls far short of what the vision is that they present. So I'll be excited for the second generation of this HoloLens technology, because when I look at this and think about not freaking Minecraft, but like RPGs, something like Sword Coast Legends, where you've got one person who's acting as kind of a game master, if you want, in some games, and the rest that are players. How cool would that be to have your players playing on screens and you're using HoloLens as the game master, manipulating the game world? I mean, oh man, that would be so freaking cool. And it would just kind of take the whole tabletop experience literally and mash it with the video game experience. Oh man. Let's see here. Yeah, I think that's it. Or just strategy games, you know, just single player strategy games where you want to have that overhead tactical view. I think it could be really cool with that. So, man, well done, Microsoft. I can't wait to see what Sony gives us. We are still in the middle of E3 here, and having a very video game centric week here in my house. And so while my younger son plays Super Mario World in the background, I'm going to share my thoughts on the Sony and Nintendo press conferences, or media briefings as they're called these days. Starting with Sony. Oh, Sony, you let me down, Sony. Microsoft just had a really strong, I would almost use the word rockin', press conference, especially with their announcement of backwards compatibility for 360 games. And I had hopes for lots of things. I wanted to see Vita games playable through my PS4, just as PS4 games are playable through my Vita. That seems like, you know, kind of something they could do, but I think they're kind of giving up on the Vita. And, you know, I would love to have seen that backwards compatibility they were working on a year and a half ago come to fruition, especially with the announcement that Microsoft made. But anyway, instead, the highlights for me were we had the No Man's Sky live demo, and if I remember correctly, the guy that's working on, that's the head of that game, said at one point, and I could be wrong, that I'm not going to get on stage and talk about this game again until it's ready for release, until it's done. And so when he came on, I was like, oh my gosh, this could be it. He's going to say after this demo, by the way, available now. And that would have been a huge showstopper. But it wasn't. And he kind of sheepishly said, I'm going to give you guys a release date soon, I promise. You know, I was just like, man, it's not that I want to rush them because I want this game to be great. I want it to be as good as it can possibly be. But I guess I would criticize Sony for just bringing it to our attention too early. I'm not interested in hearing about games, you know, really until they're, you know, at least a year or less away from being released. Yeah, it really bothers me when we see the same game at E3 more than two times in a row, and I don't even like to see the same game at E3 two times, just once, and then release it, baby, before the next E3. Otherwise, what are you doing, you know? Anyway, that was lame. The other thing that potentially, I guess, could appeal to me as a pretty RPG-centric gamer was the announcement of the Final Fantasy VII Remake. And all we got was a CG trailer and virtually no details. All they were telling us basically is, your wish is finally coming true. I mean, the wording of the trailer was kind of, you know, at last the promise has been made, you know. And that's a little bit, you know, of meta commentary there. You know, it was supposed to be relating to the Final Fantasy VII plot, but I think it was really about fans wanting Square Enix to commit to doing a remake of Final Fantasy VII. I'm not one that's been clamoring for a Final Fantasy VII remake, you know. I thought Final Fantasy VII was great. I think a lot of people, it's the shining Final Fantasy in their mind because for a lot of people it's the first one they played. But there were at least two more really great Final Fantasies before that one, Final Fantasy IV and Final Fantasy VI, which both released on the Super Nintendo. And VI, I think, is superior to VII. I would love to see a full-blown remake of VI. That would be awesome. But instead, we're going to get VII. That's fine. I'm not complaining. And if it's being re-envisioned enough, I'll probably buy it and play it. My hope is, I don't really want just kind of like an up-resed version of Final Fantasy VII. You know, because I had the Final Fantasy VII experience. I want a new experience. I want a new Final Fantasy experience. And so I want them to rewrite the dialogue. I want it fully voiced. I want, you know, obviously it's going to have all 3D environments, I would imagine, you know. I can't imagine they would just be using the same backgrounds. I mean, they're releasing it on the PC version on PS4 coming soon. I can't remember what the date is. What?
I can't beat that castle.
Oh, okay. Well, go try a different level, and then maybe when I'm done recording, I can help you. Okay. All right. So, anyway, my hope for it really is that it will be a new enough experience that it'll be worth it for me to go back to, but I really want it to be a largely new experience. Yeah, just better writing, better, you know, localization in terms of the dialogue and stuff, just completely overhauled with maybe the same core story, so that they can still call it a remake. But I really don't have any interest in being true to Final Fantasy VII. It was a solid, great Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy game. I have fond memories of it, but I've not been pining for this. So just give me a good Final Fantasy VII. My greatest hope for it is that people will buy it. It'll be hugely popular, and it'll be turn-based, and then maybe Square Enix will see that, oh, people are still hungry and wanting a turn-based experience, and maybe the next Final Fantasy, number 16, will come back to more of a turn-based type flavor instead of this full-on action RPG that they've been getting into more and more as they've been westernizing all of their games. So I was hugely underwhelmed by Sony's press conference. There were no surprises or show-stopping announcements for me. Probably for other people, you know, Uncharted was really cool, but I don't know. I felt like that whole driving sequence is like, is this all on rails or something? I mean, like, I don't see how this could work. How, as a player, I could be expected to take this exact path. That, or maybe you could take any number of paths, and you would still have all these interesting bits of dialogue that the two characters in the car would have together. I really don't know what I was looking at and how it, you know, how the final play experience of that part of the game, you know, will match that. It's just, I don't know. It didn't tell me much about the game. So I'm hoping that Sony will have better things to reveal and say at Gamescom. I'm hoping that they'll react to Sony, to Microsoft's announcement about backwards compatibility by saying, okay, let's resurrect that that backwards compatibility program that we were working on, which from a reliable source about a year and a half ago reported that it was going to be backwards compatible to PS2 discs, maybe even PS1, but PS2 I know for sure was mentioned. I would love that. I would love that. Anyway, I'm not going to get on that whole bandwagon again. I've, in previous videos, talked about that enough. All right, let's talk about Nintendo. They start out with this kind of puppet gag, which made me think, are they like, did they partner with Jim Henson Studios to, is there going to be a game with the Muppets or something? What is this whole weird puppet thing? And at the end of the day, all that said to me was that they are, affirming their connection to family entertainment and to making toy-type entertainment. I mean, that's, I'm seeing them more and more as a toy company these days. As opposed to last year's Robot Chicken, kind of interludes between their segments, which I think was a reach out to core gamers, maybe more adult gamers and that are more like hardcore or whatever. I don't know what those words mean really at the end of the day, but you probably know kind of what I have in mind when I say core gamer. Let's see, moving on, we have the Star Fox segment. Shigeru Miyamoto, who's the guy that's in charge of that, it was interesting. He said that he feels the Fushimi Inari Temple that he's grown up near has protected him and inspired some of the Star Fox Zero level design. I thought it was interesting that he would even mention that. I think it's kind of like just another kind of reminder that that spirituality, whatever that vague term means, is actually very popular today. And I think that's probably why that was mentioned. You know, we want to attach spiritual, deep significance to things that we care about. We want to find a way to do that, to elevate them in that way, you know. But generally, as a human race, you know, we like to avoid asserting that, at least in, I would say, Western culture and westernized culture, and probably, you know, Eastern culture as well. We like to avoid asserting that any spiritual idea is objectively true, you know. So that's why, you know, it would be awkward for him to go on and talk about, the things that he really believes that are related to that temple. But that would really be kind of moot anyway, because the temple, as I did a little bit of reading on it, is associated with Shinto, which is a religion that's less about, like, holding on to specific beliefs and more about tradition, and they're very accepting of kind of a la carte spirituality. Like, oh no, you can worship this kami, but then also believe in Buddhism or whatever else, Shinto really isn't about making truth claims, as far as I can tell. It's fairly relativistic and so anyway, back on to Star Fox though. Can you imagine, by the way, if he would have said, that, boy, my love for Jesus really inspired the making of this game. Oh, my gosh. Okay, anyway, Star Fox. It looks fine, but nothing groundbreaking visually. If it wasn't attached to, like, an IP or a franchise that had some nostalgia that came with it, then it would be unremarkable to me, except for the gameplay, the control scheme, as it was described, with the second screen gamepad on the Wii U. Struck me as really innovative and cool. Like, you're flying around, with the ship using the gamepad controls, but then when you're going to aim at something specific to, like, fire at it, you're using the gamepad. It's kind of hard to describe, but I would recommend checking out the Nintendo Direct video if you haven't already. It strikes me as very innovative and the kind of thing that really should have launched the first year that Wii U came out. It took them so long to create titles that really properly used this hardware that they'd created, and I think this is, the first one that I've seen anyway in promotional materials that I've been like, wow, that really seems to have captured and the strengths of this hardware setup on the Wii U. Reggie Fils-Aimé, the American head honcho of Nintendo, described Nintendo as transforming and needing to constantly transform, and I agree. I hope that's what they're doing. I think that's what they need to do. But then he went on to describe how they are transforming. They're expanding to theme parks and mobile devices. And he did mention briefly they're developing the new console codenamed NX. No info about that, though. He said more info coming in 2016. So I think they're transforming, but for my taste, they're transforming in all the wrong ways. Reggie, in a segment later, was talking to the developer of Skylanders and how they're partnering, with them on the Skylanders games for the Wii U. And he asked this guy in this totally scripted, canned interview, what it was like working with Nintendo, which is so protective of their IPs. And I'm like, what do you think he's going to say? He's going to say exactly the lines that you wrote for him, or at the very least the outline, probably not scripted literally. But, what do you think he's going to say? So, of course, he said it was great and that Nintendo gave them so much more freedom than they, could have imagined asking for, and I'm like, okay. Trying to repair a little bit of damage there, because Nintendo is notoriously difficult to work with over the course of their different consoles. It's just third parties have a hard time working with them. Going back to the original NES, when Nintendo, had very strict regulations about what kinds of games were going to be allowed to be on their console, So, anyway... I'm like, okay, trying to repair some of that damage. Maybe I don't know what motivated that, but I'm like, okay, great, Nintendo. Next stop is your YouTube policies, okay? So you can get those changed. Anyway, they announced two new Zelda games. They're both for the 3DS. There's a co-op Zelda game, and there's a port of one that came out for the Wii U. It's not a true... Neither one is like a true blue Zelda game. They seem like placeholders and some things to appease the fans until a proper Zelda game comes out. And then they got a Metroid Prime co-op for 3DS. I think that's probably in response to the fans who've been like, where's a new Metroid game, But is this the game that Metroid fans want, or do they want something that's closer to like a true blue, old-school, side-scrolling Metroid? I don't know. Time will tell. I thought both of those things, the Zelda games and the Metroid game, were interesting gestures and hopefully signs that they are listening to their fans and will start really putting their resources toward things that their longtime core fans really want, as opposed to reaching broader and broader and trying to get, families and kids and stuff like that. I know they have to reach out to new audiences, but I'm selfish. I'm selfish. I'm selfish on behalf of core Nintendo gamers. I really don't care about Nintendo. Anyway, although I did care about what I saw in Xenoblade Chronicles X. That looked really cool. It's coming out December 4th, 2015. I'm going to buy that probably on a future non-Nintendo port when Nintendo finally gives up on the hardware business and just starts selling their games as software, as a third-party publisher. I don't know if that day will ever come, but... Oh, man. They're headed that way if they don't... I don't know. I don't know anything about business or marketing. Don't listen to me. Right. Of course, we saw tons of Amiibo, tons of their toys that they're selling, which is really just DLC in disguise and horribly overpriced. You want to talk about horse armor? That's what these things are, These little toys, I don't even know how much you're paying for these things, but they're a bunch of little horse armor action figures. You can Google horse armor and Oblivion if you don't get that reference. Anyway, Super Mario Maker, that was probably the most interesting thing to me, is coming out September 11th, 2015. This thing really looks cool. Go check it out. I'm not putting any footage of Nintendo stuff in here, even though it would be fair use, because Nintendo is just, like, totally... their YouTube policies are pretty, intense. And they can flag you even when you're totally within your rights, and it's just not worth the battle for me to try and put Nintendo footage in this video, so I'm sorry about that. But go, if you're interested, check out Super Mario Maker, or just let them kick themselves in the teeth, and don't. But anyway, you've got like little clouds that you can, that you would see in the Mario games floating across the top. Well, you can take these very common items and use them in very unconventional ways, like Mario floating on top of a cloud through a level, and you can control as a player where the cloud goes. You can put Goombas in the water, there's so many crazy level designs that could potentially be invented here, and you can use the graphics from the original Super Mario or the graphics from Super Mario 3 or these kind of like up-res, I want to say like new Super Mario Brothers Wii type graphics. I mean, it really looks like there's just a ton of potential there. I think this could be a big seller for them. They were noticeably playing, there's my son, they are noticeably playing up nostalgia. I mean, they were talking about the history of Nintendo and all the universal memories and experiences that people share. Okay, shh. Universal memories and experiences that people share, you know, because of Nintendo. And they're just like, oh, Nintendo just brings us all together. We all have memories of Nintendo and Mario and stuff like that. And granted, they are celebrating Mario's 30th anniversary right now, but still, it just seems like, man, it seems to me like they recognize that nostalgia is kind of like the thing that has hooks in people the most. Maybe the only significant thing that has hooks in a lot of consumers, as far as Nintendo goes. So, but I think it's kind of sad if that's the case, that they are having to like play up the nostalgia and appeal to people's nostalgia so much, when instead I would rather they really create game experiences that gamers like myself would really like to see, and to put the resources behind them to get them out much more frequently if they're going to keep having problems getting third parties to publish games on their consoles. So anyway, oh, and Let's Super Mario. This is an initiative they just started. Share your own Super Mario video. Let'ssupermario.com is open now, where you can share your own Super Mario video. They had like a montage toward the end of people like singing the Mario theme and playing it on different instruments and doing all their different versions of Super Mario themes, and they spliced it all together to be one continuous kind of like representation of the theme. And so they're just like, okay, now it's your turn. Make your own Super Mario video. But publish it at letssupermario.com. Because if you put it on YouTube, we're gonna crack down on your butt. So, good luck, Nintendo. Good luck. Still in the thick of E3, and this time I want to talk about my reactions to what would be for me the highlights from the software company press conferences, you know, EA, Ubisoft, and Square Enix. My notes are a little bit out of order, so I'm going to go in a strange order. I'm going to start with Square Enix. Sorry, Enix. I recently learned that it's pronounced Enix, not Enix. Sorry, I got to rewire my brain from, I don't know, like a decade or two of thinking Enix. All right, anyway, this one was very, like, a very formal type of press conference. You know, it's clear they haven't done this in a while, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, they presented their information well, and it was just a little bit unusual when compared to. I think if there wasn't the backdrop of E3 and what E3 has become with these press conferences, this wouldn't seem strange at all. It would be cool, informative, and, you know, and even fun in its own way. But compared to the others, it was just... Oh, it felt like awkward, and you know, there was like a podium, and the first guy who opened up the conference was fairly wooden, and you know, I mean, these guys, and you can't blame them. These guys are like, they're just software guys in suits, you know, and stuff, and but it added to it that he was standing at a podium. You know, everybody that spoke stood at this podium with this mic that came up, you know, and. Oh, man, it just sucked the energy out of the room. And whenever there was applause, it always seemed to be started by one guy kind of near a microphone, probably employed by Square Enix, who was clapping really loud, and then everybody else would kind of, you know, join in. Okay. And, you know, even there was even like a handful, and I mean a handful, because it was a small room, relatively speaking, you know, maybe just a few hundred people in there. I'm not sure, I'm bad at judging numbers, but certainly microscopic compared to what we saw at like Sony and Microsoft and even like EA, you know. Yeah, it was when they announced Kingdom Hearts 3 or anything related to Kingdom Hearts, because there was two Kingdom Hearts announcements. You know, there was like one or two people that you could identify. They're just like, yeah, thank you, you know. But like, that didn't exactly energize the crowd. You know, it was just kind of like, it was awkward. Like these one or two guys would be like, awesome. And then it was just kind of like quiet, you know. So that was an interesting experience, you know, and hopefully those guys didn't feel too awkward. It didn't feel like it was a failure or whatever, it's because of, you know, the difference in the energy of that room. Because I thought they had a few interesting things to say and to announce. One of which was the Final Fantasy VII Remake, which I mentioned in my video talking about Sony's press conference, which I'm excited for only because if it's really popular, it will hopefully remind the folks at Square Enix that, hey, people are still interested in a turn-based type of experience. That's assuming that the remake will maintain the same battle system and stuff. Frankly, apart from the battle system, I would like a large-scale remake where the dialogue is redone completely and maybe just the same core story is intact, but otherwise it's a completely different experience. I would really love that. Okay, great. Just so you all know. What else? World of Final Fantasy. This was a very kind of adorable game. They even described it as adorable, and it's intended to introduce new audiences to the Final Fantasy franchise and to be playable by, they said, all ages and sexes. And I don't know that the other Final Fantasy games are particularly, you know, gender prohibitive in any way, but maybe age prohibitive just in terms of their complexity or maybe their theme or something like that, or their visuals. Maybe some of the visuals can be kind of dark, but this is their intent here is that the combat system be simple and deep at the same time, but we got very little images of actual combat going on. It seemed like maybe it was turn-based. They mentioned that there's kind of like this tower system where characters stack on top of each other. I'm not sure what that's about. What I saw of the combat was very brief, and it looked like there was maybe a traditional turn-based type of element to it. But anyway, their vision for this is that it'd be the kind of game that adults could play with their kids, you know? And even before they kind of marketed it that way, when I saw it at the Sony conference, I was like, I'm curious about this game. I want to check it out because, you know, despite the fact that it's kind of cute, it's if the gameplay is cool and like that classic Final Fantasy, I can get into cute stuff every now and then. But then as they started marketing it this way as a game that, you know, adults could play with their kids, I was like, boy, I got a 7-year-old, I got a 4-year-old, you know, by the time this game comes out, this could be something that would maybe work, you know, and something that I would enjoy doing as well as they would enjoy doing, you know, or at least I would enjoy enough to want to come back to it. So, you know, it's on my radar, but like 3 years ago, probably not much at all. Okay, great. Welcome back. All right, so let's see. Hitman. This is a return of a franchise that's been kind of off the radar for a while, unless you count the mobile games. And this looks really cool. It looks like a game I'll be terrible at and probably won't even touch. Maybe I'll try out the demo or something. I don't know. I probably won't. But it's like a sandbox game that's about planning assassinations and then carrying them out. And there's so much flexibility in what they demonstrated for this game, you know, that you can, like, you know, it can be a crazy bloodbath where you just go in and kill the target and, you know, whoever else gets in the way, they die too, and it's all public and terrible. Or it can be like meticulously calculated and carried out so that no one notices and no one knows how the assassination took place. You know, they showed clips of the same target being assassinated from totally different routes, you know, at least two or three. And
Daddy, I beat it the level.
Good job. And so it looks really cool in that way. The other thing that kind of caught my eye is that there was something about like sharing these target scenarios with other players online. So you could like, I'm not sure exactly what that meant, but apparently it's going to be heavily incorporating user-created content, user-created missions or challenges that people present to others to like, they like maybe tag somebody in this sandbox world and then invite their friends to go and assassinate that person. I'm not really sure of the details at all. Very vague on that, but this game I think is coming out at the end of this year. I could be wrong, but I'll be very curious to see what kind of experience this is when it finally comes out. The game that I would say most caught my eye was Star Ocean Integrity and Faithlessness. Now, I'm not a particular Star Ocean fan. I did try one of the games once, but I'll be really curious to see what this game provides. It's going to, you know, be a Japanese RPG, but more in the action vein than in, like, maybe similar to, like, the Tales series of combat, just based on the videos I've seen of those games. But not like a turn-based affair, really, but more like an action party-based, you know, RPG. It's going to be released in 2016 for PS4, and they're describing it as being in the model of a good old JRPG. So I'm very curious as to what kind of experience they're going to create there. And they're also attempting to break away from JRPGs are movies, you know? And certainly with, like, Xenosaga, that was, like, the first JRPG game that I was like, I can't do this. These cutscenes are, like, 15, 20, and I heard eventually like 30 minutes long, these stretches of cutscenes between gameplay, and I'm like, I can't do it. If I'm going to watch an anime, I'll watch an anime. And so this is an effort to really kind of break from those stereotypes and really integrate seamlessly they described it, the exploration, the combat, and kind of the cutscenes and stuff. So I'll be really curious to see what that ends up being like. Then, of course, Deus Ex, Mankind Divided, was featured very well in the conference. I love the look of that world. I played some of Human Revolution, a good, you know, I don't know, 3-4 hours of that game, and enjoyed it, but eventually I realized, you know, I think to really do well in this game, for my crappy skill set, I would have to go stealth instead of, you know, guns blazing. I think my reflexes just aren't good enough for the challenge level that that tactic involves. So I would have to go stealth really to go through the whole game, and I don't really enjoy stealth gameplay, so it was like not the game for me. So I'll keep an eye on it and see what they have to say about the gameplay and the different options you have, and maybe this one will be the Deus Ex for me. I don't know, but it does look like a really solid game. Another announcement that was interesting to me was that Square Enix has established a new in-house studio called Tokyo RPG Factory, and they said that the name was purposeful in that this company, this studio, is going to be dedicated to making JRPGs, and I think as if to say the emphasis is on Japanese JRPGs, you know. And they've got a new IP that's planned for release in 2016. I think this is a good move for Square Enix, who, as I mentioned before, more and more has been westernizing their Final Fantasy franchise in ways that I just think are just the wrong way to go. And I would love to see from them a desire to return to the strengths of the Japanese, more of the Japanese RPG format, and just the different things that the Japanese culture, in terms of like, you know, visual design and all the quirky mythologies and stuff like that, you know, have to offer. So anyway, I think that's a good move on their part. All right, so that was Square Enix. Moving on to EA. So we saw the Mass Effect CG trailer. Show me gameplay. Till then, I don't care. There was no Mass Effect Collection announcement. That was a bummer. I was really, really hoping for something like that. Maybe we'll still get something like that between now and Gamescom. I don't know. I feel like that was a missed opportunity for BioWare, and that was very disappointing for me. There was a cool HD face scan technology where you could take this phone app, scan your face, and they'll put it on your character in a game. But you know what game that was for? NBA Live. I'm like, that is wasted technology. I mean, yes, I suppose everybody on some level plays video games so that they can imagine themselves in that world. But when I think of sports games, I think that, you know, they're not nearly about immersing yourself in a game world the same way as, like, say, an open world sandbox RPG like Fallout or Skyrim is. And, you know, you get those choices in many of those open world games to just modify the character's face and stuff. And so many times I was like, you know, I'm not even going to try to make my own face because I can't. I can't figure out how to do what I want to do with these things. And it would be so much more convenient to just have a face scanner if I wanted to put myself in a game to do that. Oh, it looked like it worked really well, but I'm just like, this is wasted technology. Wasted! Anyway, and then of course we can't escape Star Wars. I didn't want to see any Star Wars, but I knew that was way too much to ask for. Star Wars, the world, the year of Star Wars. The world of Star Wars. It feels like that these days. So they announced a CCG for mobile devices. I'm like, okay, whatever. Moving on, the producer of... oh yeah, Mirror's Edge. This was an interesting part of the EA conference. Producer of the Mirror's Edge Catalyst, the new game, says of the game world, "Who will save us? Who will save us from our oppressors? Who will save us from ourselves?" And I thought that was really interesting because you don't often hear any kind of recognition that that we require saving, that we are self-destructive beings, and that we require rescue for the things that we choose to do to ourselves that are self-destructive. I mean, that is what Jesus came into the world to do, to save us from each other and to save us from ourselves. But very rarely is there an acknowledgement of that, that we need any kind of saving from ourselves. We might say, well, such and such corporation or government entity or whatever, religious organization, they're evil, and we would be better off if someone would come and just clean the world of those other people. But there's very rarely a recognition that, you know, we are destroying ourselves. We are self-destructive, and we need to be rescued and fixed from our broken condition. So that was just a little interesting kind of bleep, on my radar as I was watching the EA conference. Catalyst, Mirror's Edge Catalyst, is marketed as having no levels or loading screens. And that's what I have wanted to see coming into this current generation of consoles. I want to see the end of load screens this generation of consoles. And it looks like they're going to do it with Mirror's Edge Catalyst, which could be very cool with this big open world city. I would love to see that. Hold on one second. I would love to see that in Fallout. Come on, Fallout. In all the demos we saw for Fallout, there were no loading screens, but that doesn't mean there are not loading screens. They may have just conveniently, you know, showed us little slices of the game that wouldn't require viewing any loading screens. So I'm like, oh, come on, Fallout. No loading screens. That would be amazing. All right. What do you need?
That level that I was in is too tricky where Mario is.
Oh, okay. Well, when I'm done recording, maybe I'll try to help you finish it, okay? All right. And lastly, Ubisoft. They had the guys in charge of the South Park TV show come on and promote the game Fractured But Whole. And that's hard to say out loud. But it's not spelled the way you think. Anyway, but it makes me want to try Stick of Truth a little bit. Not because I'm a South Park fan. I haven't, you know, sat down and watched an episode in like, gosh, I don't know how many years. Probably 6 or 7 years. So I'm not particularly drawn to the show, but from what I have seen of clips and heard about the Stick of Truth is that it really does a great job of making fun of video game tropes and cliches. And I like RPGs, and it's a turn-based RPG, so I'm like, oh man, that would be cool, you know? South Park can sometimes go in directions that I'm not a big fan of, but seeing that they're making the second one, and that it is a follow-up to the original, and this one is superhero-themed instead of, like, fantasy-themed, made me, you know, thinking, well, maybe I should go check out some reviews for Stick of Truth and, you know, see if I still feel the same way, or if I'd want to, you know, maybe give it a try. The PC gaming show, it went pretty well. I mean, for their first time out the gate, I felt like it was pretty well done. You know, there was a little bit of filler, and it was kind of obvious when AMD was coming out and, like, you know, plugging their stuff, showing their wares. But I mean, that's also part of what E3 is about. So I mean, you know, it's hard to, you know, to criticize AMD at their own, you know, at the show that they are helping to host. Hard to criticize them for coming out and saying, hey, here's our latest hardware and stuff, and trying to sell you on it, you know. I thought it was very informative in terms of games as well, and, you know, it was a good show. The two highlights for me, though, were Killing Floor 2, which is like a big, like, zombie-type apocalypse, maybe, shooter with, like, lots of blood and guts, and it's just really super violent and stuff, and I'm not a fan of shooters because I just suck at them, but I was interested because John Gibson, the president of Tripwire Interactive, was on the show, the PC gaming show, wearing a Living Sacrifice shirt, and I was like, Living Sacrifice, I think I've heard that name before, and I googled it, and it's a Christian death metal band. I thought, well, that's interesting, you know, and so I did a little bit more research, and saw him in another photo op in 2013 wearing a Demon Hunter band t-shirt. These are both death metal Christian bands. Looked a little further, and this guy, John Gibson, president of Tripwire Interactive, is a self-identified believer. He's a Christian. And in fact, all the music in Killing Floor 2 is licensed from Christian metal bands. Apparently, Gibson used to be in one and has retained those connections, resulting in Christian bands being featured in the soundtrack of the upcoming, fairly anticipated, I believe, as I'm not really part of that shooter culture, but I believe it's a fairly anticipated game, Killing Floor 2. And so all Christian bands featured in that soundtrack. So that really caught my eye, just as a believer who wants to support art made with excellence by Christians out in the mainstream. I mean, I think we should support Christians that are making art aimed at Christians. Obviously, I'm saying that selfishly because that's what I do. But I think we should also really get behind art being made by Christians with excellence that's being marketed at the mainstream. I mean, these are the kinds of efforts I think that we ought to encourage so that these kinds of artists will enter and stay in those creative fields. I would love to see more more of the rising generation get involved in creative industries like film and video games and writing and stuff like that. I mean, who knows what subtle but valuable influence their work may have on both believers and unbelievers. I mean, Killing Floor 2, just as an example, the soundtrack alone may eventually lead some gamers to the rescue of Jesus through them exploring the soundtrack, exploring the different bands and what they're inspired by. I mean, you just never know what God's going to use. And I think certainly some of these very subtle, non-preachy choices that Christians make when they're making excellent art in the mainstream could be awesome and have, you know, not just entertainment value, but could have potentially eternal impact, you know. So that's definitely something that, even though I'm not a fan of shooters, I want to, by word of mouth, just kind of put out there and say, hey guys, go check out and maybe recommend to your friends if they're into those kinds of shooters. It's available now for early access on Steam, and it's coming to PlayStation 4. So now getting into my personal preferences, I suppose, much more from here on out. The second thing that really got my attention at the PC Gaming Show was the announcement of the Pillars of Eternity, The White March DLC. The White March Part 1 DLC, which I'm very excited about. I've been playing the crap out of Pillars of Eternity. I shouldn't say playing the crap out of, just whenever I'm kind of in the mood for a more tactical experience, but I've really been enjoying it a lot, and so I will definitely be picking that up. I didn't see, you know, like an announcement date for that, like a release date, so I don't know when it's coming, and there was very little in the teaser trailer that they offered, but I'm still definitely looking forward to it. Okay, now on to just kind of the various things I took in from media outlets, the closer looks at some games, and the first look for me at a number of games. First up, Deus Ex Mankind Divided. I mentioned this when I talked about the Square Enix conference, but this game is really back on my radar as of, you know, now, because of what I found out in some interviews that the creators did, namely because of the promise that they made to improve combat and make it a more viable option. The problem I had with Deus Ex Human Revolution that stopped me from playing all the way through it was that it seemed like after a while I was going to have to go to stealth, because I suck at shooters. I suck at anything requiring hand-eye coordination and quick reflexes of any kind and, you know, fast thinking. That's just not me. So I wasn't really into stealth games. So I was like, okay, I suck at the combat too much to go the combat route. I don't really want a full-on stealth experience through the whole game. Now and then is okay, but this is just going to require too much stealth for me. I'm not interested. But this promise to improve the combat to the point that it's a viable option if people want to go full combat all the way through, that's something that's really got me looking again at Deus Ex Mankind Divided. Next game, Super Mario Maker. Now, I am not a Nintendo fan. I mean, I grew up on Nintendo, but I don't have any nostalgia for it. In fact, I hate Super Mario games because I suck at them, and I just end up dying and repeating the same portion of the game over and over and over and over and over again. But the creative side of me is really excited about Super Mario Maker and just seeing what people create. I'm not going to buy a console to see it, but I'm really looking forward to see what people create. It seems like this whole concept, I saw more of like some of the levels that are being created by people already, like the in-house play groups, and the stuff that they're creating is just off the wall. I mean, you could almost call it platform creator for the wildly, very un-Mario type of experiences already being made. It just looks like it could be a great thing for fans and for Nintendo, because fans are going to get a chance to make and play what they want versus what Nintendo thinks they want and has maybe been getting wrong for a while. And now Nintendo, through this, will also be able to see firsthand what fans want, because I have to believe that as people are, you know, downloading in these different maps that players are creating, Nintendo's going to keep track of those numbers and say, oh, these are the kinds of gameplay experiences that our fans are interested in having. So I think this could be a great thing for the future of Nintendo. We'll see. I wish that I could show you some video, but Nintendo's YouTube policies just make me a little bit nervous, and I don't even want to fight that battle with them. So anyway, there you go. What else? Horizon Zero Dawn. This is a PS4 exclusive. You know, I was like, okay, that looks cool when I saw it on the Sony stage, you know, show. But I learned more about it afterward in kind of the prolonged demos that they had on the show floor. And this is a post-apocalyptic open world action RPG. And if I remember correctly, I even heard it quoted that it is going to be have no loading screens, and completely open world. That's very exciting to me, especially the no loading screens part. It is a single player experience. They were very clear on that. And it's got a cool like slow-mo combat feature. So even though it's an action game, it has some conceits that will allow sucky players like me to be able to enjoy the experience. And of course, with the RPG elements, I can presumably level grind my way out of crappy situations that require better skills than I have. That one's coming in 2016, but it looks awesome. I am very curious about the world where, you know, it's post-apocalyptic, and, you know, it's like there's these tribes that are surviving in a rejuvenated Earth that is overrun by machines that are like animals. They have herds and hunting patterns and stuff. It's looks really, really curious. Or makes me curious, I should say. Can you say that something looks curious? I think you can. But I won't. Anyway, No Man's Sky. One person, I think it was from GameSpot, who got to have a hands-on experience with it, described it as starting out like Minecraft, with limited resources that you use to gain other resources and improve your ability to gain resources through crafting. So you're upgrading your suit, you're upgrading your weapon, which allows you to mine more effectively. You're upgrading your ship, you're upgrading your suit allows you to explore more areas. Upgrading your ship allows you to explore more areas, you know. So it's this kind of this cycle that I guess would be similar to Minecraft, which I really haven't played very much at all, of, you know, you mine stuff so that you can make stuff so that you can mine stuff, and then you're going forward more and more like that, you know. So, and this one also has the element of you mine stuff so you can make stuff so you can explore, and then mine more stuff so you can make stuff so you can explore, and so on and so forth. So that seems to be kind of the basic cycle, but then there are also these this practically infinite game world that looks tons better than Minecraft, and also has built-in systems of trade, and it has these living groups to interact with, like planetary protection enforcers. Some planets are under the protection of some kind of space police force, and you're not talking to these people, but you see their ships. They're represented through their actions, you know, ships and stuff, and you have, you know, maybe like warring, well, not maybe, there are warring factions that are orbiting planets that you can just ignore, or you can get involved with and try to, you know, pick a side, in which case, you know, that they'll remember you taking a side, and the appropriate factions will remember that, you know. And and apparently you can upgrade your ship, but this seems to be like built on mystery. It seems to me, and to one commentator at I believe it was Game Trailers, I could be wrong, that mystery is a big intended part of the experience. It's really about capturing that feeling that many early Minecraft players had of you're dumped into this world, and you discover all these crafting recipes. And the same is true here, except you're also discovering maybe other things about the game, not just what you can make, but like what you can do and what's going on in this world. And so that kind of thing really excites me. I think I'm the kind of person that would have really gotten into Minecraft if not for those crappy graphics. I know they're retro and it's a whole aesthetic and stuff like that, you know, but I grew up on Atari and Nintendo and Super Nintendo, and I'm fine to leave, I'm more than content to leave blocky graphics behind. If somebody want to make Minecraft 2 that actually has, like, you know, current gen graphics or something even remotely in that direction, then I'd be excited. But anyway, it's also, this is important to me, not a simultaneous multiplayer experience. You know, there will be evidence of other players inhabiting that universe through the information they upload to the main database, so you can discover a planet and it'll say discovered by blah and it's called this and da da da, but you're not going to be interacting with other players, presumably, maybe never as you play the game. That's kind of unclear. What I'm wondering, the big question in my mind about No Man's Sky, will it require a PlayStation Plus subscription? Because I don't play online games, but I'm very interested in this kind of an open world exploratory experience. But am I willing to pay whatever their subscription fee is annually or monthly or whatever in order to just play this one game when I will otherwise not have any reason to take advantage of the other multiplayer features that are offered by PlayStation Plus? So that would be unfortunate to me if you're required to have PlayStation Plus in order to play this game. But other than that, I'm very excited about the potential of this. I still wish there was a release date, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see what Gamescom holds for us. Maybe we'll get lucky and they'll announce it there. Next game, Kingdom Come Deliverance. This is coming summer of 2016 to PC, Xbox One, and PS4. It's a sandbox medieval RPG, which normally I would not be into at all. Like, I need some kind of magic, some kind of fantasy, some kind of otherworldly aspect. And this game reportedly does not have that. I mean, they're even marketing it as, you know, Dungeons, no dragons. But it has so many other kinds of things that I like from an open world RPG, like, say, Skyrim, to which it's already being compared. It has an alchemy system, and that has me curious, because I'm like, well, what the heck is alchemy? I thought that was basically an attempt to do stuff like turn lead into gold and, you know, kind of, you know, have this kind of magical vibe to it. So they're not calling it chemistry. They're calling it alchemy, which is really curious to me. And they're not calling it medicinal skill or medicine, you know, or whatever. They're calling it alchemy, which is really curious. I guess maybe I should just look up the definition of alchemy and see, you know, if, I don't know. It was just interesting that they said alchemy. But maybe that'll still be enough in and of itself, even if they don't allow a touch of kind of like the magical or supernatural or, you know, whatever, fictional into that. Maybe it'll be enough to be making, you know, cures and things like that and medicines for people. I don't know. So I'm curious enough about that. It also has fantastic visuals. It's got lock picking in it and stuff. So, I mean, in many ways, it feels like it's going to be a Skyrim type of experience, but without the magic. So at the very least, it has my attention. I'm going to be keeping an eye on that and wanting to learn more about it as we get closer to next summer. Moon Hunters. This is another independent game. And many of these are. Kingdom Come Deliverance certainly is. What else is? No Man's Sky is an independent game, certainly not a AAA title. So there we go. So, but anyway, Moon Hunters, this is a 1-4 player co-op action RPG. What's interesting to me about this is that there are group decisions that you make as a group. Now, you can play this just by yourself, but I think the idea is that you play it with other players as well, because your group makes decisions on plot choices with an in-game voting system. And the ties are broken by the leader, who is the person that currently has the highest charm score. So I thought that was very interesting. And those choices that you make are going to affect your reputation in the world in which you live and exist. And you're building, as you play this game, some kind of like a legend and a mythology about yourself that other people in the world believe and come to know about you. And so choices is fairly important. And I can see it being interesting to have this kind of tension of being with a group that, like, you know, everyone votes to pillage the village and kill everybody there, and you vote not to, you know, but you're still associated with them. I don't know how much your choices and, you know, reputation is going to be integrated and how that's going to affect the game. I don't know. It looks simplistic because of the graphics. They're going for kind of like a retro style, but maybe there's, you know, more going on under the hood that will kind of be satisfying for an RPG player like me that would be interested in kind of creating a reputation in a world. And so anyway, it seems like a more RPG-ish alternative to other Gauntlet-style experiences, like, say, Magicka 2. So again, a lot I don't know. It's certainly not a guaranteed purchase, and to my knowledge, there's no release date given yet, but it's got my attention. I'm curious. What I may purchase, depending on the price, will be Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. This is coming out August 11th on PS4. It's an open-world, non-linear exploration and story discovery game, I guess you might say, in which you are apparently the last person left on Earth. You're exploring a small town in England, and as you're moving around this completely deserted environment, you come across these glowy, clouds, these glowing clouds that, as you walk toward them, you start hearing the people's voices, and you realize, oh, these are kind of like echoes of people that were once here before this event, you know, caused everyone to vanish except for yourself for unknown reasons. And so you're exploring this environment in whatever order you choose, and over the course of the game you're piecing together what happened and what role you played in this event, if any, and what role you might play in how the world goes forward from here. So it looks like a beautiful game and very intriguing. And I'm always looking for a game that me and my wife can play. She's, you know, likes games that are about story and about choice and about exploration. And she also likes puzzle solving. And when I described this to her, she was like, I don't know. I think I might like a little bit more of an objective of some kind. This just sounds a little too open-ended. I want a goal, you know. And so for her, maybe discovering what happened in the world won't be enough. It's a very open-ended type of experience where, you know, reportedly you just play it until you get out of the game what you want, maybe until you've discovered how much of the story you think there is that you would like to discover. The developer, though, said that if you really did everything and went everywhere and stuff like that, you could get 5 to 6 hours out of the game. Ugh. That is a really, really short experience. Now, it is an independent developer, so I mean, that's not shocking to me, but still, it's like, okay, 5 to 6 hours max, and sometimes you have to kind of downgrade that estimate from developers, you know, from what I understand, you know, so maybe we're looking at 4 to 5 hours absolutely max, you know? So what does that mean? If we don't do everything there is to do in the game, we're looking at a 2-hour experience, 3-hour experience? I don't know. So, I mean, you know, I'm not going to pay anything. Absolute max I would pay for this would be, I think, like $28, because I think that's about how much 2 times going to see a movie with my wife would cost. So, yeah, I don't think I could pay more than $28 for this. If it's only going to provide about 1, maybe 2 nights of entertainment for me and my wife, I don't know. All right, next up, I'm not sure how you pronounce this, Masquerada. It looks like it should be pronounced Masquerada, so that's what I'm going to go with. Masquerada, Songs and Shadows. It looks like a tactical pause and play type game. I mean, that's how they describe it. It's, you know, very much like Pillars of Eternity. They said it's inspired by the Baldur's Gate games and Neverwinter Nights. But the difference between this and those games that I noticed right away was the visual style. It's got an animated style, but not like a Saturday morning cartoony, but more like an adult animated style. I would almost say anime, but without the Japanese stylistic influences. But just like a high quality, you know, kind of adult oriented type animation look to it. That kind of cel-shaded look in what looks to be a unique fantasy setting, not the typical medieval type fantasy setting, but I'm not even sure. I'm not a history buff enough to be able to tell you kind of what the influences are, but it has just enough of a unique twist to the aesthetic that it's definitely got my interest. Hopefully the visual style they're going for will result in low system requirements because I don't keep up with graphics cards and stuff like that. I'm just a console guy, but I mean, I do like to play games on my laptop every now and then when I'm on vacation or something like that, so this would be something that maybe would work for that, so but it's going to be off my radar until I'm done with Pillars of Eternity and all the expansions, Shadowrun as well, and then also another game that I'm going to talk about in a little bit. All right, so moving on for now, The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing. This is first in a series of, like, so far 3 games. The third one, I think, is due to come out very soon. That basically looked like Diablo 3 clones to me. It's a PC series, but the first one now is coming to Xbox One. Looks really cool. I mean, the graphics, the it just looks beautiful, but also dark, and yeah, when I first saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, oh, I'm really disappointed that I don't have an Xbox One right now, because this looks awesome. But then I noticed something about it. I was like, yeah, you know, speaking of Diablo 3 clone, this looks a lot like Diablo 3 in that you are swarmed by enemies. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. In fact, I kind of don't like it. You know, I feel like in a game like Path of Exile or some of the, you know, PS2 Diablo clones like Baldur's Gate, Dark Alliance, and the Champions of Norrath, you weren't swarmed by as many enemies, and so it made each enemy feel a little bit more threatening and a little bit more special, and, you know, and I kind of got tired in Diablo 3 of feeling so powerful that I could take on and just blow up, you know, these swarms of enemies that are surrounding me, and I'm just like, die all of you, you know? I kind of like that feeling of, oh my gosh, you know, when 3 monsters are attacking me at once, it's a serious situation, you know? So, you know, at a second look, I was like, you know, it doesn't disappoint me all that much to not be an Xbox One player. But you know what? If you liked Diablo 3 and you liked that feeling of just like slamming through waves of enemies that are all swarming you at once, take a look at the trailer for this game. It looks like, you know, if you want that on a console experience, that this might be really, really cool. All right. Well, let me now talk about the games I'm going to start saving for, the games that I saw for the first time, or no. I didn't say none of these for the first time that I see at E3, but this year, but games that I saw more of at E3 this year that I'm like, okay, start planning for in your finances right now. And the first one is Mad Max, which is coming out September 1st. Now, I saw Mad Max Fury Road, and according to reports, the game is not as good as that movie, you know, but that movie was awesome, and this game is reportedly great. Not awesome, but great. And I will totally be on board for a great Mad Max game right now. Lots of car driving. It's open world action with RPG elements. You can upgrade both Max and your car. And from looking at some of the gameplay demos, just looking at the health bar, it would be situated around one of the elements of your HUD, like a circular element of your HUD. And just the way that health bar started to curve slightly around that circular element, I was like, oh yeah, you're totally going to be able to upgrade your health as the game progresses. And as long as you can do that, that's like RPG element enough for me. If I could just pump, you know, experience points or whatever it is that you get into health, into defenses and stuff like that, then that can help me get through an action experience like this. And also death, I read in Game Informer a couple months ago, is very forgiving, and you keep all the items that you gained and just respawn in a, you know, kind of a local area, and then you can go at it again. So between the RPG elements of being able to upgrade both Max and your car, and the forgiving, you know, failure state, you know, when you die, this sounds like it's totally a game that I can do in terms of my sucky action skills, and also a game that I will really, really enjoy for just what it is, this post-apocalyptic open-world RPG. But I think the driving, you know, I mean, I'm looking forward to Fallout 4 a ton more than this game. And so this game, but I wouldn't buy this game, I think, if it didn't have all the driving elements. I think that's something that's really going to set it apart from Fallout 4, is the ability, this major car focus, you know. It also has slow motion target assist with the main weapon of the car, which is the harpoon. And so again, that indicates friendliness to non-shooter players like me. It's got a great focus, it looks like, on the tactics of car combat. You know, you get different weapons, you get like these flames that can, like, you know, burn the cars that come up next to you on either side, or you can strategically target your harpoon, target the wheel of a car with your harpoon and yank that sucker out, or target a person and yank them so that they're like being dragged behind you, you know. So it looks like, in the, you know, in the sense that Fury Road was, this really crazy, wild, violent world where, like, just human nature is set loose in the worst possible sense, you know. And so that's a world that I'm very interested in exploring and kind of surviving in, as it were. Let's see here. You've lost your interceptor, for those familiar with Mad Max lore. That's kind of like his main car. But you've lost that car, which I'm wondering if that could make this feel like a sequel or prequel to Fury Road, because, I don't want to talk about Fury Road. No spoilers. Anyway, but you've lost your interceptor, and you're aiming to replace it with your magnum opus, it's called, the ultimate wasteland vehicle that you are trying to create over the course of this game, so that ultimately you can find a way out of the wasteland and find a life of peace somewhere to forget and heal from all the loss that you've experienced. That's just a part of Max's origin stories, that he lost his wife, he lost his daughter, he's experienced so much loss, and that's kind of what has driven him mad, you know. And in his stories, he's inexorably drawn into the lives of people that need his help, and he begins to kind of lower his guard and start feeling just enough compassion for to help them somehow along the way, but at the same time, you know, at some point he steals himself and moves on. So it's a, you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of how that plays out in this long-term story experience in this game. The overarching gameplay involves capturing and utilizing strongholds to further your goals. Apparently you can capture these strongholds and then customize them, and each stronghold maybe can yield certain things that will help you along with the rest of your goals long-term. Lots of car driving, as I said, and combat with resource management, including food, water, gas, scrap, and different things like that. You're managing all those resources as you move through the game, and you're upgrading, as I said, both the vehicle and Max in terms of his equipment and his abilities. Very excited for the potential of that game. I don't think it's a day one purchase for me. I think that's a let's wait until I see the reviews from the major outlets. But other than that, I'm definitely going to be beginning to set aside money for it. In addition to setting aside money for the other PC game that will keep me busy probably until I get, you know, before I get around to playing Masquerada, and that is Divinity Original Sin, although I'm not going to play this on PC because it's coming to console, Xbox One and PS4. They're aiming for the end of October. Maybe that'll fall into November, who knows. But that's what they're aiming for right now, is the end of October. Now, this is a top-down, party-based RPG with turn-based combat. I mean, I'm very much into that. I wish it was real-time with pause. That's my preferred top-down tactical RPG experience. But I'll take this as well. It looks really cool, and I've heard just nothing but awesome things about the PC version. Now, this port, quote unquote, is actually a recreation of the entire game. The developers said that they think of this as a completely new game, a completely new experience. It's got a new ending. They've redone a ton of the skills and abilities that they weren't happy with, and it's now fully voiced. And this was really cool. I wish I could show this to you. But it has like a very intuitive user interface for the gamepad. I can't remember who was doing the demo, but I saw one of the media outlets doing a demo with this thing. And you know, with these kind of games, it's all about pointing and clicking on things to look in chests and open up barrels and decide which enemy you're going to attack and all that kind of stuff. And they have created entirely new user interfaces so that people with a gamepad can totally do all of those things. Like one example would be you move your character so that he's facing the objects that you want to pick up, but maybe there's a few objects kind of like in your field of view, and if you didn't quite, you know, highlight the right one that you were intending to look at, just a simple shoulder button will move it over to the right or to the left to the next available object that you could potentially interact with. There's also like where you can press one of the stick buttons and it will scan everything in a certain radius around the character, and then boom, a window opens up and it's got a list of things that you can choose to interact with just by scrolling down and selecting them. And so it just looks like they've done a ton to make this accessible to someone that just wants to bum on the couch with a gamepad and play this really immersive kind of PC RPG game. So very excited about all that they've done for this that I've seen firsthand. Like, this looks great. Again, I'll still probably wait for reviews because at the end of the day, I didn't, you know, play it myself, but I am going to set aside some money for it. This is also really cool. It has co-op, and apparently like couch co-op, couch or online, I wasn't completely sure. It really looked like couch co-op to me, that goes into split screen when needed. So for example, you're controlling a party of say 3 to 4 people, then your friend comes over and you're like, hey, you want to bum on the couch and play some Divinity with me? Okay, you hand him a controller, and then you go to a menu and you select which character or characters he will control, which you can change on the fly as you play the game. So it's drop-in, drop-out co-op, and then he will control those characters as you play the game. And if he moves, I saw this, as he moves, if he moves his characters far enough away from your characters, then the screen will split, kind of like I saw in the later Lego games, like Lego Batman. I saw this feature used. You share a screen until you move far enough apart to warrant splitting the screen, at which point the screen is split and you guys can go off and do your own things. I mean, it's really, really cool. Current owners on Steam and GOG that have purchased this game will get this new version for free. I'm not sure if on these, I would assume that, you know, you can plug in a gamepad and play it that way on your PC now if you want, or when this update comes out. But I thought that was really cool that Steam and GOG owners of this game on PC will get the new version for free. Very cool. The other game that's got my attention, which is coming out on PS4 by the end of 2015 and on Xbox One as well, is Sword Coast Legends. It's coming to both current-gen consoles, but no footage shows the gamepad play yet. Even when they showcased it on the Xbox One stage and the PlayStation stage, you know, they... or on those channels, I mean. they were showing PC gaming footage. You know, all the hotkeys were numbered instead of associated with, like, XB or Triangle or whatever. It's going to be playable over PlayStation Network. I did watch an interview with the developers on the PlayStation channel. There's reportedly a long single-player campaign, and there's also a Dungeon Master tool, which I recently learned Divinity also has. But there's a Dungeon Master tool that will allow a Dungeon Master to create adventures and then also live during the game interact with players as a Dungeon Master. Part of the vision includes online players playing this game together, voicing their own characters over online chat, you know, so the Dungeon Master would be voicing all of the monsters and the people that the players interact with, you know. Monsters can be AI controlled, or in boss fight situations, the Dungeon Master can take control of the main boss in that encounter on the fly and take advantage of all their abilities and stuff. I would totally play this with people online that I know. And I hate playing online. I avoid it like the plague. This, I think I would play online with people that I knew. That said, this will be an interesting experience. It's not going to be the tabletop experience or the video game experience. You know, so if you're expecting a tabletop experience where you can see each other and you can see that look in your Dungeon Master's eye when he does something weird and quirky as he's representing this character, you know, you're probably going to miss that unless they have some kind of picture-in-picture feature, which they didn't mention and haven't seen in any of the demos or anything like that. So I don't know. But without that visual ability to look at your Dungeon Master, to look at the other players and stuff like that, it's going to be missing something of that, you know, of that tabletop experience, you know. And at the same time, when you sit down for a video game experience like this, I don't know. I'm used to, like, being able to go at my own pace and stuff like that, and just have a certain experience of, like, you know, reading text or having it fully voiced and stuff like that. It'll just be a little bit weird to be playing this video game where, like, some dude that you're playing with online, which is presumably your friend, you know, is voicing these characters and is maybe kind of stuttering as he figures out, as, you know, as game masters do, trying to figure out, okay, how would this character react to this player? You know, there'll just be kind of this slower paced, potentially awkward moments that'll come with a game like this. It's just going to be a weird or potentially awesome mashup of the tabletop and video game RPG experience that I'm really curious to see how that plays out. At the very least, this game interests me for the solo campaign and for the potential that Neverwinter Nights had, where players created these modules, maybe converted from classic paper and pencil published adventures or their own creations and stuff that they can put online that you could play for free. Hopefully, they'll allow you to download other people's modules and adventures and stuff for free. But I mean, that adds so much crazy replay value to a game like Neverwinter Nights. And to think about that potential for a new game with these kind of graphics, and then also with a gamepad bumming on my couch playing this. Oh my gosh. If this thing meets my vision for it, I mean, I could see myself not buying another game for a year and just playing this. Nothing but this. Oh my gosh. Regarding the gamepad, since I didn't see any footage that showed the gamepad being used like I did with Divinity, I'm very confident that they've created a user interface that totally works with gamepad. I have no idea if Sword Coast Legends is going to be able to do that or not. So regarding the PS4 gamepad, the developer only commented on the speakers. You know, they asked, you know, what kind of things will you take advantage of with the PS4 DualShock, blah, 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 you know. And he said, do you like the touchpad or the motion control? And the developer said, you know, the speaker has me interested. Like, maybe monster sounds could come out of the speaker, but, you know, that's still really in development. We don't know exactly what all the final things are that we're going to do with that yet, you know. So that has me a little bit nervous, because I wanted to hear about, okay, well, how is it going to work with a gamepad, period, Xbox One or PS4? But, of course, the PlayStation guy was asking specifically about the PlayStation 4 gamepad features, so, you know, I can see why he might have been specifically responding to the speaker issue. It wasn't quite the question that I wanted the guy to ask, but, you know, we'll just see. We'll just see if it works as well as the Divinity gamepad experience looks like it's going to work. Anyway, but, you know, the game that I'm easily the most excited for, and it's like a no-brainer that I'm going to have money set aside for it, I will buy it day one. I will possibly even pre-order it. And that is, of course, Fallout 4, coming out November 10th. I'm so excited for this game, and I already talked about it in my my video about the Bethesda, you know, stage show, so I'm not going to go into any more about it. But I'm so stoked for this game. And yet, I remember the same feeling for Skyrim, which was awesome for many months. I played the crap out of Skyrim, loved it. But at the end of the day, 350 hours later, it did eventually become repetitive and had lengthy load screens. And so that just reminds me that, you know, there's a danger for us as gamers in placing our hopes for happiness in the things of this life. You know, at worst, they let us down and we feel like this massive lasting blow of disappointment when this movie or this game or this book or whatever it is that we've just been anticipating, we finally experience it and it's just crap, you know? I mean, and that can, in the worst case scenario, I think bum some people out for days, you know? And in the best case scenario, you know, like my experience with Skyrim, I think, they excite us, they satisfy all of our gamer nerd itches, you know, for a while, maybe quite a while, but ultimately they lead only to disappointment and then kind of this perceived need for that next fix, if that's where we're putting our hope for a good, fulfilling life in, you know. So I think that it's always good to remember that we gotta, speaking for myself at least, I can't be alone in this, but speaking for myself for now, I'll limit it to me, I gotta rewire my brain to have an eternal perspective, or the wrong perspective is gonna creep in and it's gonna mess me up, you know. And even this week I noticed, you know, I felt at one point in the middle of the week this emptiness and this sense of mortality that I you know, I was like, man, I'm kind of in a funk at the end of the day. What is this all about? And I realized that because my schedule was all messed up, that I'd been forgetting time, forgetting my normally blocked in time to spend with God in prayer and in the Bible, and just kind of reminding myself of what is true about myself, about my purpose, about the world, you know, and what each day of my life is about. And when I lose sight of that purpose, then I kind of get in this funk. So I think that I need to lock my eyes on the hope that I have, that all of believers have in Jesus, and the hope we have in the eternal life of rescue from disappointment that he promises, you know. We can absolutely enjoy wonderful things now. Absolutely. There are many things to enjoy now that should be enjoyed now, and the Bible encourages our enjoyment of them now, but they only have beauty and wonder for a limited lifespan that they possess, and the Bible's also clear about that. And that should cause us to look to eternity and to a future that we can't possibly imagine. You know, Ecclesiastes 3:11 tells us about the nature of pleasure and beauty in this life. It says, he has made, this is the NIV, it says, he has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. And then 1 Corinthians 15:19-20, I'll leave you with this thought. In the ESV, it says, if in Christ we have hope in this life only, we are of all people most to be pitied. But in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits. He's the forerunner, in other words. He's the model of what will become of those who have fallen asleep. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and now POS TOS. If you're not familiar with this channel, this is Matt McKinney's channel. Matt's been on the show a number of times doing our Star Trek segment, and he's got a channel where basically he just kind of riffs, talking about some, usually, from what I've seen, usually like what he considers really crappy episodes of Star Trek. He is a passionate Star Trek fan, and his tagline basically is, I love Star Trek, which is why I hate bad Star Trek. And so it's a really interesting perspective. You know, he's got a good head on his shoulders. shoulders, and I think is objective enough. I guess you would say, I don't know how objective any of us can really be when it comes to our personal tastes and stuff like that, but I guess he's a huge Star Trek fan, but at the same time, he's willing to look at some episodes and say, yeah, that was crap. Probably more willing to do that with Star Trek than I am with Farscape, although if you've been following Farscape Shawarma, I've definitely acknowledged some stinkers in that show, but anyway, and he's got like a razor sharp wit along with his cohort off-screen Kim. The two make an awesome duo, and I wish so much I was as witty as they are. So great interesting stuff. So yeah, I would highly recommend checking that out. At some point I'm thinking I might try to get Matt on the podcast so we can just kind of talk about his show a little bit and have him introduce it a little bit. But for now, don't wait for that. Go check it out. For more information about all the members of the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Incoming transmission.
Well, I recently asked you guys in the Christian Geek Central community what was exciting you and getting your attention at this year's E3. Here's what you had to say. T. Morrill said, aside from Fallout 4, and then he goes into massive, bold, all caps, I am so very excited for Mass Effect 4, I don't even care about the crap ending from 3 anymore. Dude, that rhymed. That was beautiful. Michael Dot Withers, on the forum says, I think this sums it up well for me, and I wish I could show you. He put a link to a YouTube teaser trailer for Warhammer Rule the World, which I heard a little bit about at the PC gaming show that I watched on E3 live stream, and that's the first Total War game probably that has my attention, because I'm not into the historical stuff. They're breaking away from historical and using the Warhammer license to create this huge epic battle world conflict. Let's try Pater. But yeah, it totally looks really cool. And then Dreamer Horwitz says the Final Fantasy VII remake got his attention. Oh crap, now my phone's going off. I gotta go do some kind of laundry thing. All right, but I'll just cross my fingers to remember that. Anyway, if you guys want to join that conversation, visit the forums at ChristianGeekCentral.com and tell me what you saw from E3 that's got you excited. And just in general, guys, I want your thoughts on this podcast. I want your feedback on what you think about Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. You know, what should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind that you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make the show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you to do that. So I want your opinions. You can send them to me at paeter@spiritblade.com. Yes, you heard that correctly, spiritblade.com. That's my new email address. I will still, for a little while, be getting emails at paeter@spiritblade.net, info@spiritblade.net, admin@spiritblade.net. But my old website service is coming to an end on July 25th. And so I am transferring now all of the management and all that kind of stuff to this new email address. Spirit Blade Productions will now only have one email address. It won't have the info or admin anymore. It's all going to be one email address, and that's mine, paeter@spiritblade.com. That's just one way in which I think a lot of things are going to get streamlined. That's more streamlined, I guess, on my end. For checking my emails, but I'm looking at merging the podcast and the blog with spiritblade.com. That's what I'm looking at right now. It won't affect you guys that are it won't affect your feed. I'm doing stuff and monkeying around behind the scenes and stuff, but I mean, you shouldn't have to change a single thing. You shouldn't have to resubscribe to the podcast. You should be just fine. Those of you that are subscribed to the blog feed, that might change. I'm not sure what's going on there, but the blog itself is getting an overhaul. I've kind of been phasing out for a while now, putting my movie reviews and other things like that on the blog. And I think what I'm going to do is, after the Book of Hebrews, I'm going to start posting the In Search of Truth segments that are written. I think I'm going to start posting those in their written form at Christian Geek Central. Now that, as of a couple years ago, I've made a point of focusing on specifically geek application in each one of those, I think those will definitely be relevant and geek themed enough to have a space and a new home on Christian Geek Central, as opposed to only appearing in their written form on the Spirit Blade blog. So the Spirit Blade blog, my plan, I think, is to just get rid of it altogether. But if you want news and updates, which I use that blog for, that will be integrated into a news page now on spiritblade.com. And then I'm also thinking of putting the podcast home there as well, so that if you want to, you know, go and manually download episodes or look through them or something, that you can do that at spiritblade.com. But as I said, you shouldn't have to worry about a thing as far as your RSS feed. You know, that should be all fine. But anyway, if you have any thoughts about that or suggestions as I'm kind of considering that and kind of moving in that direction, let me know quick, because now would be the time that I can incorporate any feedback you might have about that. But right now, it's looking like a really good option for me, and I think that it'll be good for users. I think it'll ultimately also drive more traffic to what I'm doing with audio dramas and stuff, which, you know, the more I can sell of those, the more awareness I can have of those, the better overall Christian Geek Central and Spirit Blade Productions will be. So I think that's going to be a really good thing. But I would be interested in your feedback on that if you have any. Also, I'm still interested in your Summer of Free suggestions. We're like right in the middle of it now, and I could definitely use some more suggestions. And then also, before I forget, if you want to see like video footage of any of the video game stuff that I talked about today, I made E3 videos, individual E3 videos of all the different segments that you heard on the show today. So maybe you just want to see the videos that are associated with like the Sony presentation or, you know, such and such video game that I talked about. You can go to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, and it's the same audio content because I record the video and, you know, just lift the audio from that to use for the podcast. But the difference with the videos is I've got some over-the-shoulder game footage that I'm playing as I talk about, you know, specific things. So if you want to see kind of a visual representation of that, of those games, alongside my commentary, then yeah, go to youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral for all of the all of those E3 videos this week. And then while you're there, please do like, share, or subscribe. That would really help out the channel. And then lastly, I want your voice and your interests to be a part of this podcast, to be a part of the YouTube channel, to be part of Christian Geek Central. You know, whether you've got an idea for a segment or something already, or just want to be part of the fun, we want to find a way to plug you in and let your voice be heard. It's also a great way to promote what you're doing if you'd like. For more info, please email me at paeter@spiritblade.com. Changing my script, spiritblade.com, for more on that. And I haven't gotten a correction yet from Tim O'Donnell, the general administrator for CGC. So as far as I know, ChristianGeekCentral@gmail.com is a real email address that you can also contact him at, and he can plug you into Christian Geek Central as well. That's it, guys. Stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, more Summer of Free. We're going to be featuring a tabletop game and two video games, plus our return to the Book of Hebrews. Thank you for your patience, as I've been inconsistent with that recently. We're going to further explore the idea of faith, and I hope that'll be useful to you. Till then, check out spiritblade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff that's made just for you. Thanks so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Peter Frentzen with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.net. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
All right, episode 313 of Farscape Season 3, Scratch and Sniff. okay, now this episode, I mean, I'll try not to repeat too much of what's in the special features in case you on, because I don't know if Netflix and stuff like that, if they have the special features on them, but if they do, or if you own the set, then I don't want to duplicate too much. But basically, this episode, obviously more lighthearted,
But originally, when it was shot, when they got done with it, they were just not happy with it. They didn't think it was as funny as it needed to be or as interesting. I can't remember all the counts that they kind of had against it, but they just sensed that the episode wasn't working. And so they took it to the editing room and just chopped the crap out of it in a really crazy, unexpected way. And that's how you get what this episode is. And it's unlike, they never did this with any episode prior to this one or after. So it's a one-of-a-kind episode. And what a great trick that they used. I mean, the first time, and I think even the second or third time that I saw this episode, it remained interesting and weird and just unexpected and just like, what the crap, you know? And, you know, because of what they did to it in the editing room, and which includes how they scored it and the sound effects that they used. And I think, if I remember correctly, I think even the scenes with Pilot, where John is telling this story to Pilot, I think all those scenes were added after the fact, after they realized the episode wasn't working and they were going to try this different approach. You know, this is just a great illustration of how Farscape, you know, at least for me, what I get out of Farscape, it's less about the stories themselves, although they do have some great stories that go in very unexpected, interesting directions, you know, but it just, you know, as far as like, it's more about how the story is told than the story itself. Or maybe a better way to say it would be that the way the story is told is part of the story. It kind of enhances the story. It makes you feel what they want you to feel about the story, you know? So it's the way they tell the story is just a big part of what attracts me to Farscape, you know? And now it's much more common in shows like Breaking Bad, and I think Battlestar Galactica some too, but, you know, the AMC stuff, you know, Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, now those are much more serious than any you know than an episode like this of Farscape, but I mean you notice now more and more with the most you know the most celebrated shows, they are shot very cinematically and very artistically. They're shot like movies. They look kind of like movies in the way the camera moves and the things they do with editing and you know and Farscape really was breaking completely new ground to my knowledge, at least in the area of geek genre fiction. You know, I don't know of any show that told stories as creatively and cinematically as Farscape did. I love the stuff with Pilot and John, incidentally, because it's kind of like it's kind of like calling out, you know, what some people who watch this show might be thinking now and then about the things that they see. You know, they might be wanting to poke holes and say, well, that's unrealistic, or that doesn't make sense, or whatever, you know. And, you know, like, how, you know, if that much Pilot, first thing he says, you know, about Jewel, because they're on this planet having, if you haven't seen this episode in a while, they're on this planet kind of having a vacation or something like that, and they get caught up in this guy who's basically milking some gland in women to make a drug out of them. Oh, hang on, gotta be Dad. Okay, well, that ended up being a dramatic parenting event. dramatic child. Anyway, totally made me lose my train of thought now. So I don't know what I was talking about. Something about the way they tell Farscape stories and, poking holes and stuff like that. You know, this is, you know, to me, it's just kind of like they're helping. You know, I don't think they were doing this on purpose. I really don't. But I just think to myself, okay, if you don't know how to enjoy an episode of Farscape, if you're a person that finds yourself poking holes and stuff like that, then they're going to help you out here. You know, because you listen to the things that John says. You know, he's just like, just let me tell my story the way I want to tell it. He had some kind of reaction like that both times. Just like, leave me alone, let me tell my story. You know? And I can't help but wonder if that was just a little bit of a remark from the producers or from the writers of the show, you know, that are just maybe, who knows, maybe there were fans at the time that, you know, were like, that were hardcore Star Trek fans who were like, this is foolishness, this doesn't make any sense, you know. And maybe it was just their little way of saying, guys, you know, just go along for the ride and let us tell the story the way we want to tell it, you know. And it reminds me, and I think I've shared this anecdote before somewhere on the podcast or something, but it reminds me of a friend of mine in college she was a big fan of Star Wars, such a big fan that when they noticed the matte squares around the TIE fighters, she refused to acknowledge that was a flaw in the production. And they decided among themselves that those were deflector shields. That was just the faint, you know, outline of the deflector shields surrounding those ships, you know. And, you know, if you love fiction, if you love entertainment enough, then you'll put your creative brain to work to make sense of the inconsistencies, you know? And I see that all the time. You see that in debates on forums and stuff like that when people get really passionate about stuff, then they'll just come up with reasons to explain the inconsistencies, you know? And that's because something else about that entertainment just gives them so much pleasure and satisfaction and fun that they find a way to make it work because they don't want to disrupt the suspension of disbelief, you know, so that they can continue to enter into the pseudo reality of that experience, you know. And I think that's the case, you know, with Farscape. You know, if you're the type of person that this show was made for, then it's not really going to bother you a whole lot if you see something that seems unrealistic. At least for me, it doesn't. When I see something that I'm trying to figure out, okay, how does that work? And I'm not even a science guy, but every once in a while there'll be stuff that'll be like, I'm pretty sure that science somehow says that's dumb. But that little voice gets squashed because then I'm like, yeah, well, science can come up with something to explain it, blah, 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 blah. Who cares, you know? So this is definitely that kind of episode. You know, what's interesting, though, is for me anyway, that this episode doesn't really hold up to repeat viewings for me. Maybe it's because I know about, you know, the fact that it was recut from what was originally intended. And so now I'm just more aware of the flaws. Or maybe the editing shtick doesn't hold up as well under repeat viewings. I'm not sure. But when I watch this episode now, I tend to see the kind of stale, somewhat uninteresting episode that was probably the original cut, you know? All right, another interruption to be dad. I thought we had changed the guard, but I guess the guard had not completely been changed yet. Oh my gosh. Okay, so I can't remember what I was saying again. Well, I don't really remember what I was going to say, and I don't want to waste more time here trying to remember because I got work to do. But next time, be another episode of Farscape, probably with the other crew and probably a much darker, more serious type story. So, we'll find out. Bye.